You have those video, those classes on the website or all this?
Are these classes on the website?
Yeah.
They're on Facebook and they're on the YouTube channel also.
All of them on YouTube?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly the recent ones. All right, let's talk about joy and happiness. Mm-hmm. All right, so the truth is that as we continue our study of Perek Lamed Gimel, I think it's a good idea for us to come back to where we were going, what this was about. Perek Lamed Gimel is found in the old numbers on page 82 on top, and we're on to the next page now, actually near the bottom of it. All right, there are times when we're happy. That's just the way it is. You're happy, great. You don't have any issues. That it happens sometimes. Some people more often, some people less often. You're in a good mood, you're well fed, all the things are working as you want them to work, so you're happy. And then there are times when you're unhappy. Maybe things aren't going as you want them to, maybe a person's suffering deprivation or pain or suffering, it's not pleasant, so they're not happy. Can you change any of that? I mean, there's all like external factors. So pharmacologically, you can take certain happy drugs. It'll make you happy. It'll give you an infusion of serotonin or whatever it may be. Or take narcotics that make people artificially happy. And today there's actually this, I don't know if you want to call it a school of thought or an attitude, that if we just drug everybody up, everything will be fine. Right? We'd make marijuana legal and everybody should take, what's it called, TBC or whatever, like they take the extracts from marijuana that makes people settled, happy, pleasant, puts them in a happy space. And people could go through life happy. So that's not really an answer for us. It doesn't really work. Why not? Because life is not about receiving things on a silver platter, but rather on working for things. And when we get it for free, it's underappreciated, if appreciated at all. The Gemara says something called Na'ama d'chisufa, bread of shame. And when somebody earns a dollar through their own hard work, it's much more valued than somebody who gets $10 with no work. And it is a fact, not a theory, that people who grow up with silver spoons in their mouth and people who have extraordinary amounts of wealth at their disposal are not necessarily happier. In fact, quite the contrary. They have the funds to spend on psychiatrists and psychologists, but they're not necessarily happier. So clearly, happiness is not simply the byproduct of having whatever you want. Happiness comes from accomplishment and from achievement. So if we work hard, we can be happy. The thing is that from a Torah perspective, one is supposed to endeavor to be happy all the time for the right reasons. And that's because we're supposed to be serving Hashem all the time. And if you serve Hashem in a state of joy, then you're serving Hashem fully. But if you're serving Hashem and you're doing it out of melancholy or sadness or, God forbid, depression, you're not doing it fully, because we can't function at full tilt if we're unhappy or depressed, which makes happiness a serious issue for us. So you're not going to be happy, you're not going to be able to serve Hashem. So the question then comes, okay, can I use external stimuli to gain or create happiness so that I can then serve Hashem? And before you dismiss it, it's important for me to tell you that there was such a concept, and that the Nevi'im, the prophets, or Bnei HaNevi'im, those who aspire to prophecy, could only achieve happiness and then hope that the presence of Hashem would come upon them. So how did they do that? So they created happy environments. They had musical instruments playing all the time, and they used joyous music to elevate their spirits, so that they would be in a happy state, so that divine presence might come upon them, because only when you're in a state of happiness can the divine presence come upon you, contrary to the popular myth that sadness and depression is a religious thing and something that religious people should walk around unhappy. It's exactly the opposite is true. All right. So the Alter Rebbe takes it upon himself here in the Book of Tanya, after pointing out to you how dangerous melancholy is and how damaging it could be, how a person has to always strive to be in a state of happiness. Alter Rebbe gives us the pathway, the key, the segue to unlocking happiness in our lives. And this in and of itself is an act of Avodas Hashem. It's a matter of attitude. It's a question of how we see things. That is to say, one could look at a situation in which they see all the negatives, and some people do that. They're called negative people, pessimistic people, the people from whom everything is black, the people from whom everything is dark, the people from whom everything is collapsing, the sky is falling. And then there are people who see things lit up and see things happy. They just tend to look at the positive things of life. This is actually part of human nature. There are people who are pessimistic or optimistic in nature. But that's not the discussion about. It's not about what comes naturally. The question is, how can we re-engineer our perspectives? How can we see the world differently? Now, by and large, we do see the world in unique ways. Everybody sees the world based on his or her experiences. And that's not necessarily only about life's experiences. It could be training. The person who's trained to be an expert in security will walk into a room and notice all the things that put the people there in danger. It becomes kind of a way of life. Security people tend to look at everything. They zero in on things. They see things you didn't see. They point out things. You notice A, B, C. You have to fix those things. An average person didn't even see them. You didn't notice them because your head's not there. You're not trained to look at things that way. If somebody is an interior decorator, they'll walk into a room and immediately point out all of the deficiencies from an interior decorating perspective, because that's what they do. If somebody's a builder, they'll immediately point out where money was wisely spent or wasted, because that's what they do. If somebody's a communications expert, they'll look at a communication that's ongoing and say, here's what's wrong with this communication, or here's what's right with this communication, whereas other people didn't see it. Everybody has the same eyes. Everybody saw the same thing, but you didn't see the picture. You know, sometimes they circulate these pictures where you look at it and say, if you could see one image or another image, a picture within a picture, or sometimes multiple pictures within a picture, and it depends how you tend to look at it. It's like looking at the black and white negative. Do you look at is it the white paper with the black writing or imagery, or is it actually the imagery, what you thought was the imagery is actually really the background, and it's the white paper behind that's conveying the message. And there are different ways of looking at things. And of course, we could choose to look at life in a more joyous way. We could choose to focus on the good things in life and the positive things in life and not look at the negative parts of life. Okay, that's true. But that's still not what the Alter Rebbe talks about. I'm just trying to kind of help you appreciate what we're going to talk about. What the Alter Rebbe does talk about is, how is it possible to say that God is with us at all times? And the Alter Rebbe says, when you train yourself to look at the world differently, when you think of creation as something that is ongoing and constant from the hand of Hashem, so then you realize that Hashem is with you. And when a person realizes that they're not alone and that Hashem is with them and that Hashem loves them and Hashem cares about them and Hashem wants what's good for them, so then your perspective on life changes. And when your perspective on life changes in that fashion, then you evolve into happiness. So that's how thinking about God, being God-focused, and not just being God-focused, meaning that I one day will have to give a reckoning before God, which is also a good thing to do. That's the idea of a moment of silence. It's supposed to be introduced to the schools that I talked about 40 years ago, so that children would at least know there's a presence of a God. What they'll think about whatever you want. But at least give children the opportunity, the possibility of their parents telling them what to think about. And just thinking about the fact that there is a super being, thinking about the fact there is a creator, and that we will someday have to stand before the creator, necessarily brings a certain amount of focus into a person's life. And it's not just he shouldn't do a crime because maybe he'll get caught by law enforcement and thrown into a prison, but rather that there is a higher force that we have to answer to. So that's a good thing, but that's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about the notion that there is a God and you will have to answer to that God. We're talking about the notion that you should look at creation and see it instead of a place devoid of God's presence, a place that is full of God's presence, which is, I have to say, by and large, counterintuitive. The intuitive way to look at the world is not to see God's presence. And the reason that's not the intuitive way to look at the world is because that's the way God created us. He made the world look like it is independent. So it's like the first picture you see is one picture, and then it says, now look more deeply. Can you find, sometimes they give you hints of what to look at. You see a picture of a tree, say, can you find the old man? See a picture of a tree, can you find the horse? It's not the intuitive thing. It's not the first thing you see. The first thing you see is the picture of the tree. And then you look more deeply and say, ah, suddenly it dawns upon you. That's where it is. Suddenly you see things differently. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in this world, and the world seems to be independent. That's the nature of this world. That's why the word olam, which means world, is also a permutation of the Hebrew word helam, concealment. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that we necessarily have the ability to see past this facade. But it's neged achush. It's not what we see. It's not intuitive. And even after thinking about this and contemplating it very deeply, we can see it in our mind's eye. We can philosophically embrace it and appreciate it, but we're not necessarily actually going to see it. So you can see the what we call the fingerprints of God. You can see the side effects. You can see the hashgacha pratis. You can see divine design. There are telltale signs that indicate that things are not just random. That statistically speaking, the random element is impossible. And there's more than what actually meets the eye only when you connect all the dots and put the picture together, which is, you know, like the philosophy of the Megillah and the story of Purim. But again, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about here understanding philosophically that there is a constant creation. And because God is constantly creating the world, really and truly, the world and its fullness and all of existence is secondary at best to the presence of God. It's just, so to speak, a superficial reality. And that is a deeper reality, a more profound reality. And once you get that profound reality straight, so then that leads you into a state of joy because you know that Hashem is with you and you look at the world differently. Now, we have talked about this over the last couple of weeks. We got very much into the nitty-gritty of what we're supposed to be thinking about. We talked about the idea of thought vis-a-vis communication. And then when you compare that to the source of thought or intelligence itself, and how each one of these levels is a step removed from my essence. And each one of these levels seems to be very prominent, but when you kind of roll it back a layer, it's not as prominent. We talked about that. And Alter Rebbe talks about this in great detail elsewhere. This is talked about earlier in chapter 21 and elsewhere. This chapter 33 is not really the source, the primary source of any of these philosophical ideas. These theological ideas are talked about by the Alter Rebbe himself in different places. Most prominently, the idea that we're going to mention now is talked about in something called Shari Yichud Ve'emuna, which is the treatise of intelligent faith, where the Alter Rebbe explains the concept of Hashem Echad, which doesn't mean there isn't two gods. That's not the meaning of Hashem Echad. Hashem Echad means that there really is only one Metzius, one reality, one entity, and that's God. And everything else is brought into existence by God, but really and truly, it doesn't have existence outside of God. And that's the meaning of Hashem Echad. And this is dealt with in 12 long chapters. So nonetheless, the Alter Rebbe touches upon it here because he's saying that not only is this the way to understand Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and not only is this critical to grasping, understanding, apprehending, and appreciating the deeper mystical principles of our Jewish faith, and not only is this the way that you will understand and say the Shema properly, but actually this is a segue to joy. And he evoked very briefly the metaphor of the rays of the sun in comparison with the rays that might be in the sun and the rays that are far away from the sun, which only exist because they are effulgence from the sun, ultimately is not one and the same with the concept of the rays that are in the sun, because the rays outside of the sun are apparent, but the rays in the sun are not. They are eclipsed by the sun. Nonetheless, the concept of the rays outside the sun have this constant connection where they're always linked to their original source. And if you take the luminary away, then the rays disappear. And this represents the notion that this world is constantly being brought into existence by its source, by God. You know, we could call this the notion of virtual reality, the original metaphor of virtual reality. It's there, it's real, it's profound, until you turn the switch off. The moment the switch is off, all of a sudden it disappeared. It isn't anymore. And now, of course, we don't see this, and we don't know this, because we're living in that picture. We're living in that reality. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in ways that no metaphor can capture, can create this reality of the rays that look like they're outside the sun, but really and truly the sun is here. Only from our perspective, we don't see the sun, but from God's perspective, the sun was never removed, if that makes any sense. You have to imagine that we are feeling like the rays outside the sun, the rays that of the sunlight on Earth, but really and truly are like the sunlight within the sun itself. So then if we're within the sun itself, then how are we? Why aren't we burned up by the sun? Why aren't we simply vaporized by the heat of the sun? Ah, this is the notion of tzimtzum. This is the notion of God's contraction or concealment of self. And God's self-screening enables us to think that we are real and exist independently of God. But really and truly, we are never really independent of God. We're always constantly being powered by God's existence. That's a brief synopsis of everything we've talked about up until now. So now in the middle of the page, which on top says Membeis, the Rebbe says, V'kocha mamesh, so to mamesh derech mashal. Now, this is almost like an oxymoron. He says, V'kocha mamesh derech mashal. Exactly so, metaphorically speaking. So if it's exactly so, how can you be metaphorically speaking? If it's exactly so, then it's not a metaphor. Then it's exact. He says, kocha, it's exactly so, but it's by means of a metaphor. So the Rebbe once explained this means that there's sometimes you give a picture of something. He said, here's the picture. This is what it is. And that's it. Once you see it, you know it, and you don't have to go any further. And sometimes you're being given the principles, the operating principles with which to be able to grasp this concept. That doesn't mean that once you're shown this picture, you understand it perfectly. It's something you have to contemplate and you have to meditate on and think about constantly. And the more you think about it, the better you understand it. And you come up with different angles to it. And it's something that requires constant thought. It's not as if you're going to be shown this picture and once you see it, that's it. Snaps in, you know what it is. There's the picture of the tree. You look at it, find the old man, the wagon, and the bird. You look at it, you see it, and you don't have to look anymore. Now you found it already. Here, it's an ongoing process. And that's the meaning of Derech Mashal. Hu bitul ha'olam u'malayoy is the notion of the world being entirely nullified before God, b'metzius. Legabe mekeirei, vis-a-vis its source, shahu ein seiv baruch hu, which this is the infinitude of God, the k'mesher kosov sham bariches, like it's stated elsewhere at great length, and of course here the Alter Rebbe likely refers to Shaykhid v'emun. So what is the point then? What is the point when we say that all of these metaphors are simply enabling us to be able to understand the concept of creation, that's ex nihilo, that's constant, being brought into existence from God, and that everything really and truly, even though it seems that it's independent of God, actually it isn't. It is actually being created. So that means that God's presence is right here with us. We are never bereft or alone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always with us. So what does that do for me? So what that does for me is, the Alter Rebbe says, besides the fact that this is the notion of feeling Hashem in your life, and this is the idea of Hashem Echad, and this is the idea of Shema Yisrael, and this is the idea of living with faith, and so on and so forth. These are all extremely important concepts that cannot be overemphasized. This is not a place for it. Here, the Alter Rebbe tells you, V'hini kishayamik bazeh, when you delve into this deeply, harbe a lot, so then, yismach libay, here's the point of chapter 33, then this will be the pathway for you to find joy in your heart, v'togel nafshe, and your soul will exult, avgilas v'ranein b'cholei v'nefesh u'ma'id b'emunazu. You'll have tremendous joy out of this faith. It's very interesting that the Alter Rebbe says b'cholei v'nefesh u'ma'id, because really, when he talks about kishayamik bazeh, thinking about this, this is the idea of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Shema means to listen, but more accurately, Shema means to contemplate. Shmia is hearing, but oftentimes somebody can hear something, but they're not listening to what you're saying. So you say, listen to me, listen to the message. And listening to it requires thought, and listening to it requires focus, and listening to it requires the ability to grasp the idea. That's called really listening. You can hear something without listening to it. So listening is indicative of understanding. So Shema Yisrael, we say, listen, hear, O Israel. We're not saying, hear, I'm going to make noise now, so you'll hear the noise. So listen, think deeply, contemplate. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem, who is our God. Elokeinu means our God, Kocheinu v'chayaseinu, the God who gives us life, who powers our existence, is Hashem Echad, that God is one. And what does we say? What do we say right after saying that you should think deeply and you should meditate and contemplate on this notion of Hashem Echad? What's the very next thing? V'yahavta eis Hashem Elokecha, you shall love Hashem, your God, b'chol levavcha, u'v'chol nafshcha, u'v'chol meidecha, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your means. Ah, so that's what he says. When a person will delve into this properly, so what will happen? So then, yismach libi v'togel nafshei, then he'll experience joy. And in what levels will the joy be experienced? B'chol lev, and nefesh, and me'id, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your means. Be emunozu, this emuna. Now it's interesting. We just called it an emuna. We just called it a faith. But then the Alter Rebbe spent so much time explaining it to us. Why does he call it an emuna? So the Rebbe says, at the end of the day, you're not going to come to this conclusion simply by scientific analysis of the world. This is based on revelation. This is based on the notion that this is the tradition we received generation after generation going back to Har Sinai. This is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, like the Rambam says. Anochi Hashem Elokecha is this mitzvah that you should know that I am the Lord your God. And that knowledge was based on an actual experience. And that was communicated to us from generation to generation in an unbroken chain. And we heard from people, heard from people, heard from people who were there. And you cannot create, statistically speaking, it's impossible to create historical facts that involve millions of people because it will get disproven immediately. And you see it already now. People deny the Holocaust. There's actual evidence. Some of the gas chambers are still standing. They can actually do forensic evidence. They can actually find the Zyklon B gas. People don't care. So what? Show me the people. Where are the millions? Oh, the millions are dead. That's where they are, unfortunately. We don't have the millions. We have barely the thousands who actually saw this and survived. So anybody normal, anybody who's not as unbiased, knows that it's impossible to create such a myth. But there are idiots who deny it. And sadly, Holocaust denial is on the rise. And it's only going to get worse. The inevitable impact of time is that at some point it will fade into a distant memory. It's impossible for that not to happen. What happened to the massacres in Ukraine in 1919 and 1920? Nobody even knows about them. What, because it was only 100,000 Jews? Because it was only 20,000 Jews? But that 20,000 people doesn't matter. 6 million, that matters. Is that what matters? Is numbers game? When you pass a certain number, then it matters and you have to remember it, but otherwise you don't have to remember it? How many Jewish people know about the Spanish Inquisition? Really know what happened? Know about the numbers, and the brutality, and the extent? How many people know about the Khmelnytskyi massacres of 1648 and 1649? Very few people. Doesn't mean it's not true. And nobody normal can deny these things because these are historical facts. Our emunah is based on historical facts, not of Moshe Rabbeinu sharing his lunch with 5 people or jumping up and down and flying in the air for 100 people. Because you can always fool 100 people or 50 people or 200 people or 500 people. As Barnum and Bailey said, you can fool all the people some of the time. Some of the people all the time. You can never fool all the people all the time. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't fool us all the time. He couldn't say, okay, everybody smoke this now, and I'm going to show you something amazing. And nobody got it. Believe it or not, there's actually an Israeli sociologist that came up with this Meshuggah theory that the whole Mount Sinai is based on mass use of narcotics. I mean, this is so absurd, it's not even funny, right? Moshe managed to get everybody to smoke up at the same time, and everybody had the same hallucination. Right, that makes a lot of sense. So we have this. We have this emunah. We have this fact. But ultimately, this is what seeds our faith. Now the question is, can it be intelligent? Can we explain this? Do we have some kind of lucid theology in which we can explain the concepts we believe in? And the answer is a resounding yes. That's what Chassidus does. Chassidus gives us the ability to have intelligent faith. Incidentally, the Rambam says it, that that's the mitzvah. It's called Yediyas Hashem, to know God. And the Rambam gives us early tools of how we can know God and what we can contemplate on. But as the development of Torah continued, we have the privilege of having the Gilui, the revelation of the Baal Shem Tov and his Talmidim, and ultimately the way it was distilled into Torah's Chassidus Chabad and Alter Rebbe. So we have the ability to have intelligent faith. We actually can understand these principles in a way that's lucid and logical and makes sense. Yes, it's based on faith. It's predicated on this is what we received generation after generation. But ultimately, we can understand it. This is not the place for this, though. Peidik Lamed Gimel is not where the Alter Rebbe develops this idea of intelligent faith. But he tells you that when you will utilize the knowledge and the information that's being given to you, and when you will think deeply and contemplate on the profundity of the oneness of God and the meaning of our theological perspective, and when you start to look at the world differently, so kshiyamek bazaharbei, you have to spend a lot of time on this. If you don't spend a lot of time on this, it's not going to make a difference. It's going to be in one ear and out the other. Why? Because it's not easy to see. And it's not easy to visualize. And it's not easy to grasp. But if you spend a lot of time on this, at some point, you will begin to feel joy. And on every level, you'll be joyous with this emunah. Ki rabahi, because this is huge. It's huge. Ki kivrus alikim mamash, This means, you know why this is huge? Because this means that God is with me right now. If you had a magic phone that people could speak to God for 5 minutes, they would give their life savings. They'd give you their kidneys. They'd give anything for that. Anybody who said that. If you could prove that to me, if I could speak to God, I'd give anything away just to have that. Just 5 minutes of bliss be with God. And Chassidus comes along and says, it's available for free. It's right in front of your nose. You have to think about it and contemplate it and meditate it enough, but it's there. And that's the fact. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here, and godliness is with us. And if a person will think about this deeply, extensively, and profoundly, then they will come to a sense of joy. So, in other words, this can't just remain in a theoretical plane. This has to be actualized for a person. In language of Chassidus, it has to be taken from the realm of Moichen, in the realm of intelligence, and it has to filter through and percolate in the realm of Midos, of the emotions. You have to actually feel this. So if you think about it deeply enough, and it's so clear to you intellectually, at a certain point, it actually filters through to the emotions. When it filters through to the emotions, which emotion will it engender? Which emotion will it create? The answer is it will create an emotion of joy. And there's no question, Alter Rebbe is 100% certain that you will have joy because this is so huge, it's such a big deal, that this will come into a way of pnimius, and from your seichel, it will become the actual way you start to look at the world and feel about the world. And guess what? Bezeh kol ha'adam. And this is ultimately what life is all about. So a person says, well, I don't have time to think about this. It's too hard to, I can't be bothered. It's too intense. I'm not such a big thinker. I'm not such a big contemplator. My mind wanders. I'm from the iPhone generation. The Alter Rebbe says, this is what life's about. This is tachlis b'riyasei. This is the purpose you were created. This is the purpose that the b'riyas kol ha'olamos, all the worlds were created. That you should have this awareness, that you should know this, that you should have that which will necessarily, if you think deeply enough, will bring you to a state of joy. That God should be have a dwelling place here. What does it mean, God should have a dwelling place here? That God should be here? He is here. You just said God's everywhere. So what's the tachlis? The whole purpose is, should be a world that thinks it's independent, but nonetheless, God should be there. What do you mean? It is, he is there. You just said he is there. How could that be the ultimate purpose? That's why I'm created? Why am I created for that? It's a fact. God created a world and he's here. So that's obviously not the meaning of Nisav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God desired, should be a Dira B'Tachtenim. Because he created us, we're part of this plan. And we have a job to do, so what's our job? And the answer very simply then, clearly it's not simply the fact that God is there, but rather that the fact has to become known. That Tachtenim, that the lower world should understand that there's a God. Not that God knows this God. Big deal. Of course you know. God knows he's a God. Does everybody else know? It's like people who crave fame or recognition, so they know what they did. Yeah, but they want everybody else to know. They just don't want to know themselves. Okay, I know, but does somebody else know? The whole point is that this knowledge should become part of the rubric of existence of Tachtoinim. And that's why when we spread and promulgate a message of God consciousness and the world becomes more aware of the Creator, that is Dira B'Tachtoinim. And when we utilize the material, ordinary world that Hashem created for a sacred and holy purpose, that is Dira B'Tachtoinim. Why? Because the world comes to recognize its Creator. And when matter and existence come to recognize its Creator, that's the Tachlis. That's the ultimate purpose of creation. And not only we should know it cerebrally, theoretically, but it should be something that's felt. Now, on one hand, we talked about how distant God is and how everything is in a state of nullity before God. On the other hand, what's necessary for us is to feel closeness. Up until now, we talked about God's distance. God is here, but he's so distant from us. But at the same time, we have to feel the sense of closeness, because otherwise, it doesn't do anything for us. It's not going to make me happy. God is here, but I'm not. If I'm not here, I'm not going to be happy. People want to feel like they're important. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should know, not only God is here, but you should be joyous because God cares about you and your being here is important to God. How great would the joy be of an ordinary, very, very simple person, maybe even a low person, when they're suddenly invited into the palace and they suddenly have this privilege to enjoy a relationship up close and personal with the king himself, with the queen themselves, whatever, with royalty. Hamis Achsen, that the king not only invites you into the palace, but actually moves into your house. The king is so to speak, if you will, the guest. He's your guest. He's staying with you. Vidarite, he's living with you. Ime Bebese, in your house. So today's day and age, people don't understand the king. We don't know what kings and queens are. It's just people to make political caricatures about. But people could have a hero in life. Maybe some people have sports heroes, some people have celebrity heroes. I don't know, it's a hero in life. And people crave to get like a moment of FaceTime or recognition with this person that they adore and they adulate and look up to. And if they get like an autograph, you know, or they touch this person, or the rock and roller throws his a piece of article clothing into the crowd, and then the people, like, they're so excited that they got a piece of this. Like, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. The greatest, most profound hero, celebrity, whatever you want to call it, God is actually with you. And when you feel and know this, then what should that do for you? That should put you into a state of joy. So v'kal v'chaymer le'ein ketz, how much more so, infinitely, is the joy that comes from kirves v'didas melech malchim lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the closeness that we are able to have with the King of all kings. U'kedichsiv, like it's written in the prophecies of Jeremiah, of Yirmiyahu, k'mihu zeh asher arev libi l'geshes alai nu'um havaya. Who is the one who has this, if you will, confidence to go and approach me just like that? But we do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. So when a person thinks about this whole thing, not just once or twice, but actually thinks about it, contemplates this, then that puts him in a state of joy. There's a story told of the chassid who came to some inn late at night, and the innkeeper welcomed him in, checked him in, and he said, "You want to have dinner?" And the guy said, "I'm too tired for dinner. I'm just going to go to sleep." Okay, fine. He showed up his room. The next morning, those days, a wake-up call didn't come with a phone. You have to go knock on the doors. So the next morning, when he came to wake him up, he found him, one foot on the bed, one hand and knee, still saying Krishna from the night before. Because he started saying Shema, and started thinking about the oneness of Hashem, and that's how the night went. So he was too tired to eat, but he wasn't too tired to think about, contemplate, meditate on this principle the whole night. And that's why these people were happy. They lived in a state of joy. They may not have had much to speak of in a physical, material way. They may not have had much luxury, but they lived with open eyes. They saw the world differently. They saw creation differently. They felt God's presence differently. And because of that, they were in a state of joy. And this does not happen easily. You can't watch a video on YouTube and say, "Oh, I'm happy now." This is only, all you could do is, Alter Rebbe is giving you the strategy. You need to implement this. The more you study it, and more importantly, the more you contemplate it, the closer you come to the fulfillment of this notion, which will necessarily lead you into a state of happiness. To be continued.